You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a veteran journalist who spent 8 years as senior editor at Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. I have another podcast called Baseball by the Book, which you should check out. Most importantly, though, I'm a longtime Orioles fan, just like you. Hey guys, what do you know? The Orioles actually won a game last night. They beat the Chicago White Sox 3-2. I know what you're saying. This is the White Sox, so maybe it shouldn't even count. After all, the White Sox are the one team in the American League that may actually be worse than the Orioles, although I think the Royals will give both teams a run for their money. But hey, a win's a win, and especially a road win is something to celebrate, I think, so let's just enjoy it while we can. Anyhow, guys, one of the biggest mysteries in all of baseball is the Orioles' approach to the international market. It's literally seen as a joke by other organizations. Ben Badler of Baseball America, who knows as much about the international market as anybody, is here to talk to us about the Orioles' approach. It's not a pleasant picture, but it is pretty enlightening. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Ben Badler. He is a senior writer for Baseball America and a guy who knows a lot about the international market. So we're here to talk to him about a story he wrote for Baseball America last week about the Orioles and their international signing philosophy. And I know this has been a topic of a lot of discussion among Orioles fans online and on Twitter and everything. So Ben, I just wanted to read the first sentence from your story because I think it sort of summarizes what we're talking about here with the Orioles. It says, Orioles ownership's annual neglect of the international market remains one of the most egregious examples of poor decision-making by a club in any area of baseball operations. So really, that doesn't candy cut it at all. It just gets right to the point. Just tell us, if you will. I mean, this is a real problem for the Orioles, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the international market is one of the major sources of talent for any club to build up its farm system. You have the draft for players from the U.S. and Canada and Puerto Rico and pretty much everywhere else, but primarily the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. You have the international market. And if you look throughout the major leagues, the percentage of international players is constantly increasing. The minor leagues is highly international. Almost all of the top 10 prospects in baseball, at least coming into the season, were international prospects. There's it just really is a bizarre, and that's probably being kind, a bizarre strategy to almost entirely ignore a major talent pipeline.
Now, you point out in the article, in all of 2017, the Orioles made 9 international signings. And as a point of comparison, you mentioned the Phillies had 54, you know, and other teams we know had similar numbers to that. I was looking at some of the numbers just over last summer. I think the Red Sox had 31 and, you know, some other teams had 35. And the Orioles, I don't think, had any during the summer. It's really, they are really putting themselves at a disadvantage. How does the organization explain this? What is their rationale for not participating in a market which is so key to talent development?
It really just sounds like ownership's decision that they don't want to be, that they don't want to make any significant investment internationally. I don't think there's a very good explanation for why that is. they're only damaging themselves and losing out on prospects to other organizations, so that's hurting them in terms of building up their farm system to have homegrown players to help the major league club, or to have players in the farm system to use as trade chips to acquire big leaguers from other organizations. There really isn't much much sense or much logic to it.
Well, I think when you talk about not being much sense or much logic to it, that's kind of an overall theme with this podcast when we talk about Orioles decision-making. there seems to be just a real lack. I mean, and you allude to this in the article, which is that this is a philosophy that goes back over different front offices. You know, it's not just under Dan Duquette. It goes back to McPhail and even earlier than that. So really, I think it's probably logical to say that this comes from the top. It comes from Peter Angelos or the Angelos sons or whoever's making the decisions at the very top. Right. I mean, this is something that you can't pin it to a specific GM or a specific vice president of baseball operations or anything. This is an Angelos production, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, and regardless of what anybody in the organization says, and not that anybody in the organization is saying otherwise. I mean, like you said, that's the actions show where it's coming from. You can judge them by their actions, and it's over multiple management teams, and it sticks out so much, and that it's just so far of an aberration from what any other club is doing. Now, you can do things totally differently. I mean, the Rays are trying something differently, obviously, with their what they're doing with their pitching at the major league level right now. But you can do things differently, and it's not necessarily be a bad thing in terms of doing things differently from what everyone else is doing. But the Orioles are just basically doing almost nothing in terms of what they're trying to do differently. It's not a strategy to try to gain an edge or to try to gain a competitive advantage over anybody else. They're just so far removed from what every other club is doing. I mean, even the Marlins, and they were kind of in a transition year with their ownership changing. You know, they still signed one of the top players from the Dominican Republic last year. They gave him over $1 million. They signed some other guys. Now, they didn't spend quite as much as other teams, but, you know, spending, you know, $2-3 million or roughly around that area that they ended up spending in total last year is just so different compared to the Orioles, who are spending, you know, not even $1 million combined over a 2-year period.
Yeah, that's another figure that was in your article that's kind of just staggering. It's like you said, between 2016 and 2017, they spent less than $1 million total on international signings, which is really hard to believe that's even possible.
Yeah, it is just remarkable. I mean, it's amazing too to look around the players who are coming up right now, whether it's Vladimir Guerrero or Nomar Mazara, Rafael Devers, Eloy Jimenez, Gleyber Torres, Ahmed Rosario. You know, these guys that are getting big money, these guys who are considered to be the top prospects in a given signing class, they're coming through right now. And yeah, all right, you're signing 16-year-old kids, so you're gonna miss on a pretty significant percentage of them. But the idea that top bonus babies from the international market are a bad investment or are not coming through and not paying off. You know, that may have been true back in like 2007 or 2008, but a lot has changed since then. And the recent track record on these guys, I think, is pretty strong. So for the Orioles to just totally eliminate themselves from that market is pretty mind-blowing. But then, like you alluded to earlier, they're just not signing that many players, period. So a Ronald Acuna who signs for $100,000, or you know, there's all sorts of pitching prospects who you can pick up for under $100,000, but you got to sign enough volume of those guys to be able to hit on them. You know, if the Orioles are signing single digit players every year from the international amateur ranks, there's just not a very good chance that you're going to get lucky and hit on one of those guys compared to the other clubs that are signing 30, 40 plus players per year.
I've heard, and I was trying to find the quote before we started talking. I can't find it, but
I think there was at some point, it may have been Dan Duquette, it may have been somebody else, alluded to the idea that the Orioles have a philosophical problem with signing 16-year-old kids or something like that. You know, we know Peter Angelos has a strong history as a labor lawyer, and he was a guy who wasn't going to use replacement players in 1995 and that kind of thing. Do you think there is anything to that, or is that just an excuse?
No, because they do sign 16-year-old players. So if it's an issue of, if it were some issue of principle, that doesn't really hold any weight. And then they even made a comment, I think when Shohei Ohtani was being posted, and I don't want to misquote anybody, but I believe it was something along the lines of, it doesn't fit with our philosophy to try to go after, the best international player in the world. they've avoided going after top Cuban players who are older than 16 years old. Not obviously the top players from the Dominican Republic and Venezuela each year are 16 years old. But there are other players who are prospects who are over 16. So they're just essentially staying out of the market almost entirely. I don't think that really holds any weight.
Yeah, I guess we're always looking for excuses and reasons, but usually they don't hold up, like you said. Another thing that I think drives a lot of fans crazy, and I think a lot of fans maybe don't really even understand the intricacies of it, and that is this idea of trading away their international pool money. That's something they've done a lot. Can you just, first of all, for people maybe who don't know, just explain what international pool money is and then why the Orioles seem to trade away their money a lot?
Right. So every team has a bonus pool of, roughly $5 to $6 million. And the Orioles are always going to end up with one of the slightly larger bonus pools. But you can trade away bonus pool space in increments of $250,000. So you can trade away $500,000 or $1 million or $1.25 million of bonus pool space to another club and get something in return. Now, you're not actually giving them the money itself. You're giving them the right to expand their bonus pool by, $250,000, $1 million, whatever it is that you trade away. So the Orioles have done that quite a bit. They've and other teams have basically used them as a sort of an international ATM because they know the Orioles are not going to spend their international bonus pool space, and they're very willing to trade away. And they've traded away for a bunch of different trades, and they haven't really gotten much in return, which, that in itself is not necessarily like a meant to be a harsh criticism of the Orioles, just that the value that any club has gotten so far in exchange for its international, for trading international bonus pool space has been pretty minimal because, like I was saying, you're really just trading for the right to spend money on a player. So if a player is worth $1 million and a team is acquiring $1 million worth of pool space, well, you still have to pay the guy $1 million to sign that player. So there have been a few trades that I think have been pretty interesting that other clubs have made. And, it's mostly revolved around holding on to their bonus pool space and then training it to teams that really, really need it to sign a player or to try to sign a player like we saw with Ohtani last year. But instead, the Orioles, just as soon as July 2nd hits, right away, they want to trade it away. Had they just done nothing on July 2nd and held on to all of their international bonus pool space, they probably could have held out and leveraged a better trade to acquire better prospects from other clubs that were in that Ohtani mix. Now, we didn't know necessarily that Ohtani was going to come over, but the guys that they ended up acquiring in trades, like a, you know, like a Brian Perez, for example, from the Rangers, who they end up losing in the, you know, in the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. They're really just acquiring a lot of organizational non-prospect type of guys for in these international bonus pool trades that they're making, instead of holding out and trying to leverage it for a better prospect when opportunity strikes later in the year.
So just a quick technical question, because I'm not sure I quite understand all the ins and outs of it. You said the Orioles often have more, you know, a little bit more of a pool money than other teams do. How do they determine exactly how much each team has? What's the determining factor there?
Yeah, so it's basically there's basically three tiers of pools. So every team, you know, this upcoming or this current signing period, we're still in 2017-18. Most teams start with a $4.75 million pool, and then teams either get a $5.25 million or a $5.75 million pool if they have one of the if they pick in one of the competitive balance rounds, and then it flip-flops each year who gets the slightly higher bonus pool. And this upcoming signing period, it's like a very specific nine-digit number that I don't know offhand, but it essentially boils down to a $250,000 increase or so per pool. So it'll be about $5 million up to $6 million for the pools.
Now, you talk to a lot of people in baseball. What do other teams make any sense of this? I mean, is this something that's talked about a lot in baseball circles? It's like, what are the Orioles doing? Why are they have this philosophy that seems to be so counterproductive?
Yeah. I actually get a bunch of clubs ask me about it a pretty decent amount, because the only time the Orioles really come up in Latin America is as the punchline for a joke, because it is so far removed from what every other club does, and it's just so dumb that other clubs are scratching their heads as to why the Orioles choose to operate that way.
Yeah, like I said, I do this podcast and we talk about the Orioles a lot in a lot of different aspects, and this year obviously has not been a fun year to talk about them, but just the overall picture of this organization, just you can't come away from the idea that this is just an incompetent organization that doesn't really seem to know what it's doing in any aspect of the game. And as a fan, it's depressing, that's for sure. Let me ask you about one guy. Ricardo Castro was the Orioles' biggest international signing last year. What do we know about this guy?
Yeah, I mean, they saw a good athlete, center fielder, who had above average speed, good arm, you know, not the highest profile guy, so not a super ton of information on him, but you know, sometimes those guys tick up and turn into legitimate prospects who can really help out an organization, and sometimes they never make it out of the Dominican Summer League. So that's you know, that's why it's important to sign a lot of those guys, not just one. So you know, they're kind of he was definitely by far their biggest international signing of the year. Athletic center fielder. Like that he can probably stay at a premium position, but definitely a long way to go.
And he is from the Dominican Republic?
He's from Venezuela.
Venezuela, okay. All right, so final question then is, and I think I already know the answer to this based on what we've been talking about, but is there any sign that the Orioles are changing their philosophy? I mean, we know that Dan Duquette, his contract is up at the end of the year. They may be having a, you know, full-scale changing of the guard in terms of the front office, maybe the manager. Do you have any indication that they're changing their philosophy at all, that maybe they are going to try to get into the game a bit more than they are right now?
No, because it really comes down to ownership's decision-making. I can't really place any blame on their scouts or, you know, really even on the management team that's in place beneath ownership. I mean, I would hope, and it doesn't seem like this is the case, but that, you know, that I don't necessarily think the Orioles are cheap. They spend money on the major league payroll. I would hope that they could have a good enough relationship with ownership to say, hey, you know, we don't need to spend, you know, if we spend even just $3 million less on our major league club this year, like, we're going to win the same exact number of games most likely than if we spend that $3 million on the major league club. If we just divert that money toward the international program, it can have pretty significant positive long-term benefit for the club. But I mean, ultimately the decision comes at the ownership level, and unless they change the way they operate, and maybe they, you know, I'm certain they read what I write, and maybe they read enough of it that they realize, huh, maybe this is an area that we should invest in. But for many years, they've been pretty stubborn in their thinking and in their approach to Latin America and just the international market as a whole. So I don't really see any signals for right now that anything is going to change anytime soon.
All right. Well, I can't say that this has been a fun conversation as an Orioles fan, but it's certainly been an enlightening one and a very interesting one. Ben, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
And if people want to find you on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, you can find me at Twitter, Ben Badler, Instagram, Ben Badler. Just punch my name in there. It should pop right up.
And of course, they can go to Baseball America and find all your writings there as well.
Yeah, it's a great time of year for us at Baseball America right now with the draft, all of our prospect coverage, and obviously probably not the best selling point on an Orioles podcast, but we do have July 2nd coming up with all of our international prospect coverage too.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.